Going Linux, Episode 34, Computer America, Number 3. Welcome to the Going Linux Podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Tom.
Going Linux is designed to provide you with practical, day-to-day advice on how to use Linux and Linux applications to get things done. If you are new to Linux, moving to Linux, or just thinking about going Linux, then this podcast is for you.
In our user experience episodes, we take 2 months to cover a topic. During the first month, we introduce the topic for the new Linux users and recent converts.
During month two, we discuss the same topics from a more advanced perspective for users of Linux building their confidence and competence with the operating system. This is my third appearance on the Computer America show, June 2008.
The longest-running national radio talk show on computers, Computer America, hosted by national columnist Craig Crossman. Look for Craig's weekly column in your favorite newspaper. This show is being beamed nationwide by the Business Talk Radio Network, the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, and on the internet at computeramerica.com. Keep it here for technology news, computer products, guest interviews, and your phone calls. You're listening to Computer America.
Hello and welcome into the Computer America show, the nation's longest running nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. It's Tuesday, June the 17th, 2008, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
I'm your co-host, Kerry Holzman.
Wow, there he is after a week and a couple of days, man. Kerry's back. Yeah. So how was your vacation?
Was I on vacation?
I've been working. It was, yeah. I had a vacation. I didn't get to do too much. I did catch a good movie. I saw The Happening, M. Night Shyamalan's film. Did you see it?
No, but I heard the reviews that this was the weakest, worst, cheapest.
I liked it.
Yeah, they used every scare tactic.
I liked it.
And it's a sadistic,
cruel.
Pointless movie.
I took my wife to see it, and she's very critical about these things, and she kind of liked it too. So there you go. It's like I can't say it because I don't want to give it away, but it was an interesting premise. Doesn't have necessarily the surprise ending that you would think that it would have, like Shyamalan is known for, like, you know, with the Sixth Sense. But still, it's I enjoyed it. I didn't get to see the Incredible Hulk, though. I can't believe that's been out for over a week, and I still haven't seen that. So I'm looking forward to seeing that as well.
Yeah, I guess I had my story mixed up. I thought that Ed Norton made an appearance in Iron Man, but it's that yeah. Iron Man makes the appearance in the Hulk is the way it works.
Well, they're all,
you know, like, in the comic books they do that.
They're all supposed to eventually be coming together anyway, if you say to the end. You say to the very end of Iron Man, right? You saw the little special thing at the end. Oh, you didn't?
No.
Oh, well, there's a little thing that kind of indicates that that's going to happen. But again, I don't want to give too much away. Anyway, I saw the movie and did enjoy it. A number of other films coming up in the next couple of weeks that I'm looking forward to seeing as well. So anyway, it's that time of the month. If you are interested in Linux, this is a show that we dedicate to that operating system. Because there's such a growing interest in the Linux operating system, especially in the wake of Microsoft's latest Windows iteration, Vista, I think that more and more people are looking at it. And are asking, is Linux right for me? Well, each month we devote the entire show to Linux in order to answer questions like that. And if you have a Linux question, tonight's the night for you to give us a call. Joining us is our Linux expert for this evening, Larry Bushy. Larry is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. Larry, welcome back into Computer America. I guess we'll get Larry here shortly. I was told that he was on the phone, but evidently he's not here.
So, hello.
There he is.
Okay. I think my phone must have been muted for some reason.
Larry,
thanks for having me on.
Hey, thanks for joining us. Always a pleasure having you here. So what's going on in the Linux world? How are you doing, first of all?
Doing very well. Missing your shows for a week, but...
you're too kind. But his aim is getting better.
Well.
He hadn't finished the sentence.
Now things are doing very well in the Linux world, and In fact, some news on the, not Linux front, but on the open source front with the release of
Firefox
3. Yes, yes, indeed.
It was released today, right?
That's right. That's right.
Are you a Firefox lover?
Well, I'm certainly a Firefox user, and I haven't come across anything that I like better, so I guess so, yeah.
Even version 3, you like version 3 better than 2.0, whatever it was, a lot of people were complaining
about having some crashing problems with version 2 of Firefox. I never found those problems, so it wasn't a big deal for me. In fact, until today's release of Firefox 3, I had more crashing problems with beta software of beta versions of Firefox than I did with the Firefox version 2. So now that it's stable, now that I've got it installed on my Linux machines, things seem to be working pretty well.
Yeah, I downloaded it today and played with it briefly, and it took over automatically as my default browser. I didn't even realize it because it looks so much like Internet Explorer.
Yeah,
it's not until you look right up at the top, you know, because the now the bars are so narrow, pretty much all you're seeing is web.
I like I like it on the Mac platform. I downloaded it today, the 3.0, and it's got they've added some stylizing to it a little bit more. The bookmarks is a little bit more grayed out. There's smooth scrolling now. For some reason, seems to work a lot better. The previous version didn't. So there are a lot of tweaks and additions that I kind of like with this version.
Yeah, I noticed in some of the Linux forums that there were some folks had some problems with smooth scrolling. I didn't notice any problems, and it really depends on your hardware and what version of Linux you're on, what problems you notice and which ones you don't. So I'm not surprised that I'm not seeing some things that other people are.
It has some subtle things, for example, with smooth scrolling, which I kind of like, as you get toward the end or the top of the page, if you're scrolling really fast, it will break as it approaches the top, slows it down.
Yeah, it kind of slows down.
It's nice.
It's very there.
A little buffer. It's very slick. It gives a nice, solid feel to the browser, which I didn't experience with the 2.0 version. So that's it's little subtle touches like that. That really make it gives you a feeling of the application is tightly written, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, absolutely. Some of the fonts appear a little bit different too. That I look at some of the buttons and things that we have here have changed slightly, a little, but they look nicer, they look neater, they're cleaner, you know. So I think it's a move in the right direction. I had a couple of add-in plugins that were now incompatible. But it was nice because instead of crashing, it came up and told you that these aren't compatible, and it would ask you, oh, would you like me to keep checking to see if they come up with a compatible version? And if so, I'll let you know, and then we'll install them. I mean, it was all really nicely done, very nicely done.
Yes, yeah. They've added some very nice features. Some of the plugins that I use as well are not up to date yet, but that's only a matter of time, I think.
Yeah, sure. But I like the way that the application itself, the browser itself, kind of handles that for you and says, you know, okay, I'm going to keep checking for it, and when they do come out with one, I'll let you know, and then we'll download it, and boom, you know, and we'll install it. So that's really nice.
Another nice feature I've noticed is that when you go and browse the add-ons, it immediately identifies those that are compatible with Firefox 3 with a green button. And the older versions, it doesn't even allow you to click on them to install them.
Ah.
So,
well, that's nice. Another major change that I noticed with the 3.0 is the back and forward arrows are now different in the sense that you have a large back arrow, a smaller forward arrow, and the way you can peruse going back and forth is now consolidated under one little tiny down arrow next to it. So you can actually go forward or go backward with one mouse click. Rather have to go to the other one, go forward, or go to the other one backwards. It's not consolidated under one arrow. You're back and forth, which I think is really nice.
So this is you're noticing this under Windows, are you?
No, actually, I'm noticing it under Mac.
On the Mac, okay.
Yeah.
I think it's a little different from platform to platform. I don't see any difference in Linux of the buttons. And again, it depends on the theme that you're using as well. But I really don't see any difference.
Interesting, because I'm using the default theme, and it's been my experience, Larry, that usually things like that, features like that, carry through across the platform. So I'm kind of surprised, but it actually is kind of nice because now if you envision just one down arrow and you can go up and down to the point where you want to, rather have to go to an arrow to the left where there's to the back arrow and then to the right arrow there's a up and down. Now it's just one arrow that takes you up and down to both, which is kind of slick.
Yeah.
But evidently they don't. Also, they have another thing in the URL window. They have a thing called Edit This Bookmark. Does yours have that where the little icon appears now? And it opens up a little translucent window, and you can actually edit the bookmark on the fly, which is kind of nice.
Really nice.
Tags and folder and the name, and you can kind of.
The one feature that I found that I've just barely played with it, but I found an instant feature. I use Firefox strictly for one reason. I have a client who has a SonicWall router, and it's blocking a lot of sites. And I tell their employees, if you need to get to a legitimate site that's being blocked, email me the name of the site, and I'll take care of it. And what I can do is log in remotely to their SonicWall router. And when I do that, it says, the certificate is not valid. We recommend not visiting this site, or click here to visit the site. Mm. But with Firefox 3, and I always had to do it, because basically I made it the homepage. Because then what I do is I just bring up Firefox as the homepage instead of having to find it in my favorites and all that other stuff. I just bring it up in Firefox, I log in my name and password using RoboForm, and I add the site that they're trying to get into the router, and instantly they have access to the site without me having to drive over there and do it. But it's so annoying to have to keep telling, okay, it's an invalid certificate, blah, 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 blah. What you can do with Firefox 3 is it says, make an exemption for this. You check a little box, and it never bothers you again for that site. I love that. And then it just comes up like a normal one. Oh, yeah. Well, because I've made it my homepage, it's the very first thing I noticed. So I immediately closed Firefox and reopened it just to see what would happen, because I've never, ever seen a browser open and access. Explorer does it, too. It says, the certificate's invalid. Or, well, I don't know if it's invalid or whatever it is, but I have another client who's got their own Exchange server, and when they check their webmail, it does the exact same thing. It says, you're about to reach an invalid certificate. We recommend closing, the Explorer window. Don't go there. Or you can ignore this and continue anyway. And every single time you go there, you get the window over and over and over. So with Firefox 3 allowing you to make an exemption for a specific site that you always visit, that it's your own freaking site, right? So that the certificates, you don't have a certificate, you don't want a certificate. So so that has been just wonderful to see that come up and without any errors. It just goes right to the SonicWall router login page.
A lot of nice new features. Yes.
One thing I kind of like, also they have a thing called, do you have it where it says unsorted bookmarks? Do you have that? A folder now? Basically, typically for me, it's on the bottom. For me, I'll have a bunch of bookmarks that I'll put in there that really, they're not categorized, but there's some things I check from time to time. And so basically they're all kind of pig-piled underneath all of the folders and organizations. But now they have something called unsorted bookmarks, where you can kind of move all of those nondescript bookmarks that you kind of need from time to time and just put them in there, and so your bookmark doesn't look so kludgy, which is kind of nice,
Yes, I notice it here in my Linux browser as well. Sure.
There it is. Yeah, and it's a nice little afterthought, and if you play around with it for a while, I guess technically you could probably make a folder to do that, but this is kind of nice because it's just there and it's got its own category, and it gives you a little bit more control over those that you really haven't, been able to categorize. So they put a lot of some nice thoughts into this and some useful features. The music means we're going to take a little break, and then we'll continue on. This is the Computer America Show and the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. It's all Linux tonight. Larry Bushy joins us, the creator and the host of the Going Linux podcast. If you want to call, 866-606-TALK. Join in on the fun. This is the Computer America Show. We will return.
Computer. Computer America is the longest-running national radio show on computers. Check it out at computeramerica.com. Computer America airs every weeknight from 10 to midnight Eastern Time on the Business Talk Radio Network.
And welcome back to the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. If you want to join us, you can by calling us toll-free, 866-606-TALK, 866-606-8255. That number will get you on and get you through. You can send us an email to live, that's L-I-V-E, at computeramerica.com, or join us in our chat room from our homepage, the Computer America website. You put in a screen name, that's something you'll be known by when you go into the website, and your Java-enabled browser, be it a Mac, Windows, Linux, PC, it'll all work. It'll move you into the chat room. Larry Bushy joins us. He is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast, and we are talking about Linux. Right now we're talking about Firefox new 3.0 version, and they have a Linux version for that, but it's an all-Linux show that we have here. And Carrie, I think I got dropped here, so I'm going to let you kind of take over while I figure out what happened here.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, so... So with Firefox 3, that is, you know, the exciting news. And I know Firefox 2 had some problems people talked about. I'm not an avid Firefox user, only because I don't have any problems with Internet Explorer. I have no reason to go to anything else. But I do have it installed primarily as a backup just in case anything does happen with Explorer. And, again, for that one particular client, who that's generally the only time I bring it up. And having that exemption just made that all worthwhile, I'll tell you what. Just it's a little thing, but it's one of those little annoying things, you know. And well, again, that's not – now, is there a Firefox version for Linux?
Well, it's the same Firefox. It is Firefox version 3, and it is – because it's cross-platform, I honestly don't know whether they write one version that's capable of operating across platforms or whether they actually have three different versions with the same core elements lying underneath. But, yeah, there's a – Firefox.
So, I mean,
for
when they release Firefox 3, they release it for all the platforms at the same time, or is it are they releasing
yes, they do.
When they're ready?
No, they release it for all three platforms at the same time. In fact, I received an email from the Firefox folks promoting the fact that today was the download day, that they would like to have everyone download Firefox, and it was sent to my Linux email address, goinglinux at gmail.com, and they sent it out as part of their publicity campaign, and they made a point of saying that it's being released for all of the platforms all at the same time.
Now, I've heard a lot of talk about the ASUS EEE PC. Everybody in the chat room's been talking about it. I've had emails about it. So I bit the bullet, and I went online, and I ordered one. But I saw they have several different... In fact, I have it right here in front of me.
Uh-huh.
Now, there are a couple of different versions of the EEE PC, and I understand that the cheap version has a very tiny screen. It's like a 7-inch mm-hmm. screen, and it's got these huge borders on the screen. But I guess they fill the borders up with antennas, and the wireless access, the Wi-Fi, is supposed to be phenomenal. It's like you can pick up a signal from 1,500 feet away, as so one person claims.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, you know, I don't want that one. It's let's see how big they go. So they go to a 9-inch screen.
Right.
And it says it comes with a 20-gig hard drive, but it's a lie. It doesn't come with a 20-gig hard drive. It comes with a 4-gig SSD and a 16-gig SSD. So what they do is they say it's $549. It's not that cheap PC that we're thinking it is. So $549. They mislead you into thinking you're getting one big 20-gig solid-state drive, when in fact you're not. And they sell it with Linux on that version, or for the same $549, you can get XP, but instead you get a 16-gig hard drive, which is, again, the 4-gig plus a 12-gig. So I got it, and I got the Linux version, because I said I'll put XP on it myself, right?
Yeah.
But I'll play with Linux first, just to play with it.
Sure.
And I will tell you what my experience was. I only played with Linux for a few hours before I imaged it. I backed it up so I can put it back on again. And I'll tell you what some of my first impressions are with it. I've only had it a couple days.
Okay, great.
And do you have any experience with it? Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it. I have not experienced it.
Okay, well, hold. We'll talk about it here in a minute then. Stay with us. More Computer America coming at you.
This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, 866-606-TALK, live at ComputerAmerica.com or the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. Carrie and I are talking to Larry Bushy, the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. It's an all-Linux show. And, Carrie, you were going to tell us about your first experiences. Well, with
my
Linux.
My first experiences? With who?
Yes. Very early on.
I qualified that real fast. Exactly.
And I just didn't know how to put it on. All right, what are we talking about?
Your hat.
All right, so, yeah, what did you think I was talking about?
I know.
So I'm looking at, I have to find the little website here that that I ordered it from, and I'll tell you which model. There's a lot of different models. There's the EEPC2G. Surf, that's what it's called. It's got an Intel processor. It's a 7-inch widescreen with 512 megs of memory and a 2-gigabyte integrated hard drive, which is basically a 2-gig flash drive. That sells for $299.99, okay? Then they have the ASUS EEEPC4G, which has, it's the 4G XP. And that's, oh, I'm sorry, the one for $299.99 that I just talked about, the 2G Surf, that comes with Linux. They don't say what version of Linux it is, but it's Linux. The 4G comes with Windows XP Home and also has 512 megs of memory. They double the size of the hard drive from a 2 to a 4, and they charge you $100 more for the extra 2 gigs on the price of Windows. Then they have the EEPC4G, which runs Linux, which is also the same price. It's $399.99. It's also got the 4 gig memory. I'm actually trying to figure out why it's the same price, because it's almost like you're not getting charged for the XP, so it should be a little cheaper. But it looks like the specs are exactly the same on that one, unless I'm missing something. Then you have the 4G XP, again, $399.99. Then you have the PC4G, which is Linux, 7-inch screen, 512 meg DDR2, 4 gig. You can see they're all about the same, $399.99. Okay, now we've got the one I bought. The one I bought is the ASUS EEEPC900. It's black. It's got Linux. It's an 8.9-inch wide SVGA screen with 1 gig of memory, a 20-gig HDD integrated graphics notebook. All right, well, it's not a 20-gig hard drive. It's a 4 and a 16. And it's got an SD card reader, and they recommend buying a 16-gig SD card and having another, quote-unquote, hard drive. So I said, no problem, right? So I played with Linux a little bit. Linux is very basic. If you want to get on the Internet, no problem. It's pretty straightforward. If you want to check your email, again, pretty straightforward there as well. And if you want to connect to the wireless, no problem. And that was my experience with Linux. And I said, okay, time to take Linux off, because I want to put, I want to be able to print to PDFs, and I want to be able to do things in Windows that I can't do in Linux, which I won't get into right now, but just some basic things when I go to diagnose networks and things, peer-to-peer networks, and all my clients are running XP. And I could probably do it in Linux. I just don't know how. So if I just throw XP on it myself, then I get the, you know, instead of getting the 12 and the 4 gig drives, I get the 16 and the 4.
You're right.
So the first thing I realize is, wait a minute, how the heck am I going to back this up? It's got no optical drive. So I went, all right, so I went to CompUSA, and I said, how much is it for an external DVD drive? Well, all external DVD drives today are all writables. They want about $100. Oh, you've got to be kidding me. I don't want to spend $100 just because I want to load Windows. So I'm looking around my office, because I'm a repair tech. You know, I got a lot of tools laying around. And wouldn't you know it, I've got one of these adapters that you use for, like, recovering hard drives. You can take a bare hard drive and
sure.
You can plug it in. It's a laptop hard drive or a desktop hard drive or a SATA hard drive. And you plug it in, and it's got a it converts it into USB. And then it's got a separate power adapter that you plug in that emulates the power supply connector. And I thought, you know, I wonder if that'll work with a CD. So I took a spare CD drive, spare DVD drive, you know, a big one for a desktop that's outside of its case. And I plugged this ugly adapter into it and ran it into the USB port. And it says, found it. I went, yes! All right, and then I'll tell you what happened next when we return. We got to take a quick 60-second break, and we'll be back. More about the EEPC right after this.
And and
Whoa.
There you are. Okay.
I've been talking the whole time, and nobody's been talking back to me. I thought you guys didn't like me anymore.
No, we didn't
just
hear you.
We didn't hear you, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow, so I wonder if you couldn't hear me, who could? Because
no.
I couldn't hear you. All right, anyway, sorry about that. What was I talking about? I was welcoming back the show that I haven't done that in 10 days. It was pretty bizarre, welcoming back the show. And, again, talking with Larry Bushy. Larry, your podcast is weekly?
The podcast is getting more frequent as time goes on. We have two episodes a month, a user experience episode where we pick a topic and take 2 months to cover it, an introductory episode 1 month, and then a more in-depth episode the next one. The other episode in the month is a listener feedback episode where we answer listener emails and voicemails and provide folks with additional tips on how to switch to Linux, how to use Linux and Linux applications. And then, courtesy of you folks, and I appreciate your allowing us to do this, we rebroadcast my appearances here on Computer America as third episode of the month. So we've got three episodes every month now.
Excellent. So I was just saying, because I'm not sure what people heard or didn't hear, that you know we're talking all about Linux tonight, as we do on the third Tuesday of the month, every month. And if they can't get enough, they want more Linux, definitely check out your podcast and with all the information you just provided us. And after the show, of course, we'll have links to Going Linux and to the podcast. And so getting back with the EEE PC, everybody's been telling me about this EEE. Carrie, you got to get an EEE PC. Even a client of mine, I'm going to get me one of those EEE. That's all I need. Okay, so I ended up sort of cobbling together an external optical drive by taking this little $12 hard drive adapter that converts, you know, an IDE laptop or IDE desktop hard drive into USB, and it's got a separate power adapter that emulates the power coming out of a power supply that you plug into the wall. And I plugged it into the laptop, and it says no problem, and it boots to Acronis, and it sees my network card, and I immediately back up to laptop. It only takes a minute because, you know, Linux is really small. And I thought, you know, that way when I can experiment. I can switch back and forth between Linux and whatever. So I said, okay, great, no problem. And then I'm like, you know, we should be able to boot Acronis off a USB drive. That would just make life, I mean, a flash drive. That would make life so much simpler. Flash drives are so cheap today, right? So
right.
I email my contact at Acronis, and I say, how come I can't make a USB flash drive with Acronis? That would just be the bee's knees, the cat's meow, you know? That would be just the thing, best thing since sliced bread. He says, oh, you can do that. Just go to Create Bootable Media and select Other Media. Really? So I look, and there it is, just like he says, right? But the problem is, I format all of my flash drives in NTFS. I take it back. When you buy a flash drive, it always comes pre-formatted in FAT32, so it's backwards compatible with other operating systems. And it's annoying to me when you get a 32-gig flash drive and it's FAT32. And it's annoying to me when you try and copy a file bigger than 2 gigs, because FAT32 will say, sorry, file's too big. Won't copy it.
Mm-hmm.
So what I have to, so if you try and format the flash drive, it won't even offer it won't even offer NTFS as an option in Windows XP. So what I have to do is format it in FAT32, right? That's how I get it when it comes in the mail. It doesn't matter if it's 128 meg or my biggest one is a 32 gig. They all come FAT32. And if you go to the command prompt in XP and you type convert space drive letter, whatever it is, /FS for file system, :NTFS. So convert :file system:NTFS. It converts the drive to the NTFS file system. And that's what I've done to all my flash drives, regardless of their size, because the sector spacing, the amount of data per sector is all equalized between all the flash drives that way. That's my logic behind it anyway. Okay, so Acronis tells you if you want to make a boot disk on removable media, that removable media has to be formatted in FAT32. So here we go again. I got a drawer full of flash drives. So I take one of these free flash drives I get. It's a Kingston. I got it at CES. I had a press kit on it. And I format it in FAT32. It takes just a few seconds to do a quick format. And then I have Acronis put its image on it. And then I plug it into the ASUS EEE PC, and it won't boot to it. Well, apparently not all flash drives are bootable. Some flash drives are and some flash drives aren't, and I can't tell how you can tell the difference. But what I did discover after trying a Lexar jump drive, a SanDisk, I bought at there's a big retailer out on the West Coast called Fry's Electronics, and they have these cheap no-name brand flash drives. It was like a 256 meg flash drive for $9.99 made by a company called A-Pacer. And I bought it just to have it. It's $9.99, you know, whatever. And it's been sitting in a drawer ever since. And I thought, what the heck? I got nothing to lose, and I'm running out of flash drives. Nothing's working. Would you know that's the one that worked? But it didn't work the way you think it would. It actually sees the flash drive as a hard drive on the EEE PC. So here I am. I'm going into boot options, right? And I'm looking for the boot option to be for the USB drive to appear. So, you know, you want to boot from floppy first. You know, your boot order, do you want to boot from optical drive first? Do you want to boot from hard drive first? Well, it just doesn't appear there. So I'm like, all right, I want to boot to the hard drive first. Then you go to another part of the BIOS, and it says, here are the hard drives you have installed. What order do you want to boot to them from? 1, 2, 3, 4. And it shows the USB drive is number 3. So you go in the BIOS and you configure it so that the USB drive is first.
Well,
then
that kind of makes sense given the fact that they're using solid-state drives as hard drives. Maybe they've got
right.
it configured in the BIOS to recognize any solid-state drive as a hard drive rather than a USB drive.
That's my guess, too.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's in the USB drive. I hadn't figured that part out yet. Anyway, I did that. I rebooted. It says booting from USB drive. And then sure enough, Acronis comes up. So I immediately took my label maker. I made a really nice label that says Acronis on it. And I stuck it on the USB drive because I have so many, I'll never remember which one it was. And now I've got it if I ever need it. But there are so many stipulations. One, the PC has to have the ability to boot from USB, which the EEPC does have. Two, the USB drive has to have the ability to boot from it, which is weird because I never heard of that before. I thought whether or not it could be bootable was solely dependent upon whether or not it had system files. But no, what it's dependent upon is whether or not the BIOS can see it when you plug it in. And if the BIOS can see it when you can plug it in, then theoretically you can configure the BIOS to boot, to tell it to boot to that drive. But not all USB flash drives are seen in the BIOS when you plug them in. So how do you know when you buy one until after you've bought it?
Yeah, I don't know. You wouldn't think that the cheap one would be the one that would have that feature, though. But
right.
Lucky
right.
for you it was.
And you know what kills me is the SanDisk one I've got. It's a 1 gig SanDisk. I paid $120 for it. Not recently. But it just sits in the drawer. And you'd think that, you know, at that, it's probably, what, 2 or 3 years old, whenever it was that that's how much a 1 gig one, that was a good price back then for a 1 gig one,
mm-hmm.
$119. And I thought, you know, name brand, expensive, that should do it. I sure as heck wasn't going to grab my 32 gig one and just format it in FAT32 and throw Acronis on it because that would be wasting 31 gigs.
Sure.
Actually, it would be wasting 31.8 gigs because it only needs 100 and some odd megs for Acronis. That's all it needs. So I was talking with the folks at Acronis and sharing with them this whole experience, and they actually wanted to know which brand I used because they want to create some press kits to give out with Acronis on it, which I think is a great idea.
Sure.
And, you know, just give them a USB flash drive and off you go. So anyway, so I got that figured out, and I guess there's a way you can build a Windows XP installation disk on USB, but this isn't a Windows XP show. So anyway, so I got Windows XP loaded, and when you know it, in the box, there's a disk. And it's, well, what the disk is all the drivers you need for Windows XP and a Linux restoration disk. So this thing's got a webcam, it's got a microphone, it's got speakers, it's got wireless networking, wired networking, the video card, sound card. All the drivers for that are right there on the CD specifically for Windows XP in the box, but you have to provide your own Windows XP. But I thought that was a really nice touch. But that meant, guess what? I had to go back to the CD drive again to load the drivers. We'll talk some more about this when we return. More Computer America right after this. Welcome back to the Computer America Show. We are live on the Business and Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, starting with Larry Bushy of the Going Linux podcast, and all about the EEE PC. Now, you know, it was a battle, an uphill battle, and I'm still learning about this thing, but you need patience with the EEE PC. I bought the expensive one, right? $549. I'm going to have to buy the extra 16 gig SD card because I'd like to have the space. There's another $50. That makes it $600. It only comes with 1 gig of memory, but you can take that 1 gig out and replace it with a 2 gig stick. So what's that, another $40 or $50? So now we're at $650. It's not the cheap PC everybody made it out to be. And the keyboard, the keys are so tiny and so close together, It forces you to hunt and peck type. You cannot touch type with this keyboard, no matter how hard you try. The enter key is no bigger than 1 inch. The backspace key is no bigger than a half inch. It's very, very tiny. And the keys, the F1 keys and F2, they're like a quarter inch wide, very, very narrow, and they're all crammed together. So the keyboard is this laptop's weakest point. The battery is, if you're lucky, 2.5 hours, which is also not very good. Here's my biggest complaint. I'm going to turn it on right now. Bingo. Power light just came on. I'll let you know. You'll actually hear the Windows, you know,
welcome
magical
screen.
Ta-da. Yeah, when it comes up. So right now the BIOS came up. It initialized. And the screen went blank.
Gee, my Mac would have been up already.
It's still blank. Still blank. Now the Windows splash screen came up. Now the blue bar is starting to move. And I'll let you know when it actually gets into Windows. Now, once it gets into Windows, you still can't use it because it's going to load the AVG antivirus. And it's going to load, and believe me, I've got a minimal configuration on here. I've got like Microsoft Word, AVG, Spyware Blaster, which doesn't run in the background, all the drivers, and that's pretty much about it. Okay, so it's still booting.
Now, Kerry, I'm a little curious. Was the boot time any faster when you booted into Linux?
Yes, the boot time was faster in Linux, although, the reason I imaged it is so I can go back to Linux and do comparisons, but now what I'm thinking I might be able to do, I wasn't aware I could do this, but now that through doing the flash drive thing, since I can choose which hard drive to boot from, maybe I can put Linux on the 4-gig drive and put XP on the 12-gig and multi-boot, just go in the BIOS and tell it which one I want to boot from.
Sure.
The problem is the way that they ship this laptop is they partition the 4 and they partition the 16 into separate drives, so you end up with like 4 drives, and I don't know why they did that. So if I restore the Linux partition, it's probably not going to work. I think I'm going to have to use the restore CD and reinstall Linux again. And I installed Windows on the 4-gig drive because I figured that's the only one you can install on, and the 16 is there to install your applications, right? Well, the problem is I can't use hibernation mode. I would love to close the lid and have the machine hibernate so I wouldn't have to wait for it to boot up. By the way, just initialized my wireless network and just, nope, I still have the hourglass. It's still not ready to use yet.
Why can't you have it hibernate?
Because the hibernation file has to be on the drive the operating system is on. You can't put it on a separate drive.
Yeah.
And however much RAM you have is how big your hibernation file has to be. So if you have 1 gig of RAM, you need 1 gig of space. If you have 2 gigs of RAM, you need 2 gigs of hard drive space. With my installation right now, my C drive has like 1 gig free. But if I create a hibernation file, there won't be any room left. And I've already moved my swap file over to the D drive onto the big side. And I installed Office on the C drive, but I installed Acrobat Professional on the D side just because there was no room to install it. It needed like 900 megs or something. Listen, I'll tell you what. We're still just getting into this. There's a lot of questions to be answered, and my computer just booted, so now I can surf the web with it during the break. We're going to play your local and national news. We've got about an 8.5-minute break. Don't go too far. We've got another hour of Computer America all about Linux today and the EEE PC when we return right after your local and national news. Stay with us.
The opinions you hear on the Business Talk Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of this station, Business Talk Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Business Talk Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Investing involves risks. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about the Business Talk Radio Network, contact us at 203-323-7300. Or at our website, businesstalkradio.net.
It's the only national radio talk show on computers to air every weeknight. Computer America, hosted by national columnist Craig Crossman. The first hour's behind us, but there's still more of tech news, tech talk, and your phone calls. We're being beamed nationwide by the Business Talk Radio Network, the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, and on the internet at computeramerica.com. You got computer problems? Bring them on. You're listening to Computer America. Computers run the world. And we run computers. Call us toll-free, 866-606-TALK.
That's 866-606-TALK. Or send us an email to live@computeramerica.com.
Hello and welcome into hour two of the nation's longest-running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. This is the Computer America Show, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
I'm your EEPC, Kerry Holzman.
And that stands for?
EEPC.
A very small computer, yes, exactly, and with a very tiny keyboard. And if you're just joining us, we are, midstream. We are doing an all-Linux show tonight. We usually dedicate one show a month to the topic of Linux. Joining us is our Linux expert, Larry Bushy, who is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. And we're kind of all over the road here with this, Kerry. You were actually in mid-conversation when we came up to the break, so why don't you...
We're not all over the road. We're talking about the EEPC, Linux and XP.
Earlier yes, we were talking about... Yeah. I mean, the whole hour we were kind of over the road. We were talking about different things. But yes, now we're talking about the EEPC. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Not all over the road. Jeez.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, go on.
You want to know what all over the road is? You should ride with Craig sometime.
Right? Ah, that's it.
Playing with his GPS, talking on his phone, and driving at 80 miles an hour. All right. Anyway.
Hazards of technology.
And a guy who doesn't turn his car off when he gets gas. You ever met anybody who doesn't turn their car off when they get gas?
Isn't that a little dangerous?
And it's a nice car. I said, you afraid it's not going to start again? I used to do that in my first car. My first car, I wasn't quite sure if it was ever going to start again, so I'd leave it running when I got
gas. See, if I turn the ignition off, then my GPS powers down.
And so you know what? The GPS takes like 30 seconds to turn back on. And you know, his car, he doesn't even have to turn a key. He's just got to push a button to turn it off or turn it on. Hey, talk about lazy. My God. Uh-huh. All right. That's just jealousy talking. All right. So here's what I'm going to do. Carrie's EEEPC. And yes. Log in. All right, so I'm going to join the chat room in my EEPC right now.
Okay,
let's see how long it takes for that. I just hit login. Let's see how long it takes. So you didn't see nothing. What are you talking about? I'm looking in the chat room. All right, I got the loading page. Actually, when it's up and running, okay, it's tolerable. But I thought I'll take this when I go somewhere and I just don't have to worry about breaking the laptop, because without the hard drive, I mean, that's the benefit. It's got the solid-state drives. But it is so
there
much is. Better with Linux on it as far as...
You just logged in.
Yeah. As far as speed goes, Linux is definitely... I mean, this was designed to run Linux. There's no doubt about it, Larry.
Sure. Yeah, and for underpowered hardware, and I would think that the EEPC would be classified as underpowered, Linux is a good solution for it.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the specs on this thing, let me see, if I go into system in the control panel here, it's got an Intel Celeron M 900 megahertz processor with 0.99 gigabyte of RAM, because 0.1 gigabyte is using for the video card. But I'll tell you what's nice about this video card. It's actually quite powerful. When you plug an external monitor into it and you hit like function F5 or whatever it is, it puts the monitor in 1024 by 768 mode. Mm-hmm. But the screen isn't big enough on the laptop to display 1024 by 768. It will only display 1024 by 600. So when you have it in 1024 by 600 mode, you have the start button on the bottom corner and you have the whole screen, in other words. But when you plug in an external monitor, the external monitor has to be at 1024 by 768, and it makes your screen also 1024 at 768. But the screen physically moves up and down to make up for the difference in the height of the vertical difference. So you don't see the start menu. You know what I mean? You have to point the mouse down.
Yeah.
And then it sort of scrolls down. That's kind of cool. All right. And then if you hit function F5 again, then it completely turns off the laptop monitor so that you only use the external monitor. And if you hit function F5 again, then it makes an extension of the desktop. So now you can drop and drag the mouse across and extend your desktop across both monitors. And then if you hit function F5 again, it goes back to the laptop screen only. I wasn't expecting that powerful of a video card.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. It sounds an awful lot like something that I used back before my Linux days, back when Windows 98 SE was just coming on the scene. Something from, was it Sony? Maybe not. It was Toshiba. The Libretto. It was a little...
Oh, yeah, I worked on the... Back in 1995, 1996.
Yeah. Yeah, they were about half size computer, a couple of sizes bigger than a pocketbook.
They were about the size of the keyboard on this EEE PC, as far as the width and the height, and about the same thickness, and about maybe a little bit smaller of a screen, maybe about the same. Quite amazing, you know, because you're talking more than 10 years ago.
Sure, and the keys were very small on that as well, and the screen, 800 by 600 was probably the largest size screen you could get at the time, and this was 800 by 300 is what it would display on the device itself, but very similar. When you connected it with an external monitor, you got a full-size screen, and on the device itself, it would scroll up and down as you move the mouse around. Something similar kind of reminds me of that sort of situation. I know that HP has just introduced a mini note that is a little bit bigger, I understand, but the keyboard on it, which you mentioned is the weakest part of the EE PC, on the mini note, they advertise it as about 90 or 92 or something like that percent of the size of a standard keyboard. And I was listening to someone review it the other day, and they were saying they really didn't notice any difference between its keyboard and a standard laptop keyboard. Full-sized enter key, full-size shift key, things like that.
Yeah, well, that's nice. But the HP Mini Note has, of course, it's got a regular laptop hard drive, like 120 gig.
Yep.
It's basically got the same size screen as the larger EE PC, like the 900. It's got like the 8.9-inch screen. But it has the VIA processor. And I've heard, you know, basically the big processor manufacturers are Intel and AMD when you talk about laptops or desktops. When you talk about cell phones or smartphones, then you're looking at VIA processors. And this thing has a VIA processor in it. And I can't help but wonder just how slow. I mean, I'm really slow with the Celeron processor that this brand new EEE PC that I bought has. I can't help but wonder how slow that VIA processor is. But again, if you run Linux on it, Linux is so much less demanding.
Exactly.
And it runs the same price. $549 for the HP Mini Note is the same price as the, and almost the same specs. Now, mine has a webcam and microphone built in. I don't know that the HP Mini Note does.
Yeah, I haven't.
Are those supported by Linux?
Mini Note? Yes. HP has an agreement with Novell, I understand, which is the company that produces the SUSE Linux operating system, and that's what's on the Mini Note in the Linux version. There's also a Windows version available too, I understand.
But I will tell you that, you know, the version of Linux they ship the EEE PC 900 with is very straightforward. It's just, you know, do you want to do this? Do you want to do that? Do you want to get on the web? And if you just want to do those basic things, like if all I want to do is get on the web and go to my webmail, then Linux is a great operating system for that. It's when I want to do everything else that's where it gets complicated. Like you can't put Outlook on it.
Right.
You know, obviously. And there's a couple other things. I like to be able to diagnose things, and it's nice to have this with me for that reason, and I just don't know Linux well enough to get down in the command lines to, like, do pinging and other things for diagnosing network connections and, you know, getting on clients' networks and making sure things are set up right. But let's say I was going to go on vacation, and all I want to do is, you know, maybe bide my time by going to CNN.com or going to some website to read the news and being able to check my email through the web. Linux is definitely the way to go because it would just boot up so much faster. I have to tell you, connecting to my wireless network, I've got WPA2 implemented here, and I've never done it before with Linux, and it was piece of cake. So
yeah, the various versions of Linux have come a long way in network connectivity and wireless connectivity. There are a lot of graphical tools that you can use for managing your network connections and your wireless connections as well, and without even having to get into the command line and do the pinging and so on. And Kerry, your experiences with Linux so far, even just on the EEE PC, are kind of typical of what the average Linux user converting over from Windows has. I don't really know what applications do what the ones in Windows that I've been using for years and years and years do. And a lot of folks find that a little intimidating, first of all, but also a barrier to adopting Linux full-fledged.
Well, and here's my other concern. The Linux it comes with has like a menu that like it looks like it's a 6-year like it's designed for a 6-year-old. That's what bothers me more than anything. Click up here for settings, and you go there and there's a little picture for everything, and and the pictures are oversized, like, you know, when the child's learning to write and they have that really big paper and they make their letters like an inch tall. That's what it looks like to me. It looks like it's like I could hand this to a small child and they could get online.
Well, I realize
I'm sort of being hypocritical because if it was complicated, I'd complain. Now that makes it too childlike.
Yeah, but I think that may have something to do with the market that they're after. I think when it was originally introduced, the EEPC was targeted to compete with the one laptop per child laptop. And that laptop, the XO, is definitely designed for a child to use. And perhaps they were thinking maybe we need to have a simplified user interface as well.
All right. Listen, we got a caller from Georgia who has a question about Linux. Her name is Barbara. Computer America, Craig Crossman. Hi, Barbara. Barbara, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, go ahead. How can we help you? Welcome to the show.
Gosh, I'm thrilled to talk with Carrie and Craig and Larry about Linux. I've recently
found those names.
Oh, okay, wonderful. I just wanted to say I was recently thrilled. I've had a couple of clients where I've had to recover some data from a Windows that I couldn't boot. Okay, and I've tried several different ways. There's easy ways, there's difficult ways, and I recently was hitched to the fact that you could use Knoppix, a bootable CD, a Linux bootable CD, to recover Windows data very easily, very simply, much easier than I was using in the past. And I just kind of want to let the chat room know and every listener know that Knoppix is amazing. What I did was I went to Knoppix, and I hope that Carrie can put this in the show notes where he can give the exact link to download the Knoppix bootable CD. And you can use this. I hear the music. I can come back?
Yeah, sure. We'll just put you on hold, Barbara, okay?
Thank you. And I will definitely wait.
No big deal. Absolutely, not a problem. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number. We'll be right back with Barbara from Georgia talking about Linux. Stay with us.
You're listening to Computer America, the official computer radio talk show of CompUSA.
Welcome back to the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number. Live at ComputerAmerica.com, the email address, or the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. Right now, we have a caller, Barbara, who's listening to us in St. Simons Island, Georgia. And Barbara, we interrupted you. We're just talking about the version of Linux that you're using.
No, it's not a new version of Linux.
No,
it's
just the newest.
Yeah, it's just the newest version that I've not a newest version. It's just a version I've learned that can actually recover data from a Windows machine, a dead Windows machine. If your Windows machine will not boot up, you can burn a copy of Knoppix. It's a bootable CD, and you put it in your drive, and it boots up, and it will detect automatically what's available in Windows. And you can simply go in and extract via USB and pretty much drag and drop anything that needs to be saved from the machine. And I have found it to be a complete lifesaver, and I just want to make sure that everybody out there knows that this is available. It's completely free. Again, it's Knoppix. It's a version of Linux. There's several versions of Linux. But this is the one that really astounded me because I have been, gosh, if you had any idea, I have been using so many different ways. BART PE is another one. Several different applications or sources to extract data from Windows. from a dead Windows, I should say.
Well, that's a good tip. I mean, yeah. You know, as a technician, I always have a bench PC with Windows on it, and I just slap any hard drive in it as a slave drive, and it makes that real easy.
If you want to throw in a slave drive, that's another great way. But even easier is to just boot up that same machine, throw in NOPIX, and NOPIX will find...
Not if you're impatient, because then you've got to wait for NOPIX to load off CD, which takes quite a while.
And let me tell you something that I learned. I loaded NOPIX, and I have found out that my bunker is a hot spot. It's a Wi-Fi hot spot. I have several neighbors that are not locking down their wireless network, and I can pretty much do what I want to do on the Internet, and I had no idea, and I didn't know that until I loaded NOPIX. So NOPIX is great for not only recovering Windows files, but... Gosh, it could automatically detect Wi-Fi networks, and that's awesome.
Do a little more driving there.
Why wouldn't your Windows also see those same? Oh, you're talking when you're using it on a client's computer, though. You're like a laptop or something.
Yeah, I'm using it on a laptop, and it has probably the built-in wireless
card or whatever. No, it's a good tip. Like I say, for somebody that's doing it themselves, I don't think it's a great tip for a shop. But for somebody who wants to do it themselves, without having a second computer or something, it's a great tip, and it's free. They've got nothing to lose by trying.
Yeah, but to me, it was just so much easier than all the other options that I was given. And I just wanted to kind of throw it out there, let you all know that NOPIX is great. You can recover these files down to email addresses, down to saved bookmarks, down to documents folders, anything that you want. You can recover that. Save it to a USB drive and be in and out in a quick time.
Yeah, I have to say that NOPIX is not just a recovery CD, though. It is a full distribution of Linux.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It has OpenOffice, all the others, Firefox is built in, everything, definitely. And I've got a PC sitting here that I kind of gathered. And, yeah, it's going to be my Linux machine, and I wanted to do Ubuntu, but I'm considering NOPIX because I was so impressed with what it did for me.
Yeah. Sure, it's a good choice, and we talk a lot about live CDs, the fact that you can boot from CDs. NOPIX was one of the first Linux distributions, if not the first distribution to develop a live CD and distribute it, and they've certainly taken the technology even further, and a lot of other Linux distributions today, of course, use that live CD technology for booting to a computer into Linux without having to have it installed on your hard drive.
Exactly, and the other thing is, there are other utilities. One of my favorite utilities is OffCrack, OPHCrack, which is a version of Linux that's a bootable CD that will recover the login passwords off an XP computer.
Right.
That can be a lifesaver for me, really. But, mm-hmm. The NOPIX that I played with just took forever to load. It had to determine which drivers you needed, and then if it didn't load, then you had to reboot it again and type, some command in because some video cards didn't work properly, and you had to, turn off some feature with some... And I don't know what I'm typing in on Linux, but there was, three different ways you could do it, and, you just worked your way through them until it worked. And it was a way of... I'm not sure which version of NOPIX I have on CD now. It seemed like I updated it maybe just a few months ago. I don't pull it out that often. I don't use it that often. It's just one of those...
The first time I used NOPIX, you had to have a little cheat sheet beside you to figure out which way you wanted to boot into it, and you had to type it in the right commands to have it work. And today's live CDs, they do all that hardware recognition automatically. And it's been a long time since I used NOPIX for any extended period of time, but if it's anything like the other newer distributions of Linux, most of the hardware recognition, most of the, whether it's video or whether it's your modem, if you're going to be dial-up, or your network card, all of that is handled automatically. The only time you have problems is if you have something that's extremely new.
Sure, or really rare.
Yeah.
Yes.
Unique. Yeah.
All right, Barbara, listen, well, thanks for calling the Computer America show, and thanks for the tip. And this is the Computer America.
What? Well, yes. I'll be sure to put a link to the Linux Live CD in our show notes.
Okay. This is Computer America. We'll be right back with lots more. It's all Linux tonight. Stay with us. It's 34 minutes after the hour here on the Computer America Show, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at computeramerica.com. That's our email address, or our chat room at computeramerica.com. All this hour, we are, and of course the last hour, we're talking about everything having to do with Linux. Larry Bushy is our is a creator and host of the Going Linux podcast and is our Linux expert for the entire evening.
So right now I've got I've rebooted it, the EEE PC, and I put my flash drive in it with Acronis, and I'm imaging the Windows XP because Download Bob there in the chat room gave me an excellent link to a how-to article from PC Magazine explaining how to dual boot Linux and Windows XP on the exact EEE PC 900 that I have. So I'm going to try that out.
Yeah.
And see how it goes.
It's cool how our chat room participants can give us some really great links, you know? I like that.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, the article seems to have step-by-step instructions there, but just for our listeners who may be thinking about dual booting Windows and Linux on one machine, whether that's on a single partition or whether that you're creating two separate partitions for Linux and Windows, you really want to install Windows first. And the reason for that is Linux doesn't care how many other operating systems you have on your computer. It'll work just fine in a multi-boot situation. But Windows tends to want to have a hard drive all to itself. And if you try to install it after installing any other operating system, even another version of Windows, it's going to take over the entire hard drive and say, nope, you can't have another operating system on here. Why would you want it? And so if you install Windows first and then Linux afterwards, it seems to work just fine.
So that's something I'll definitely keep in mind. I was curious, though, what your thoughts were on this, these EEE PCs, because they are so limited. I mean, where do you see the market being? I mean, would you want one of these yourself? Or, I mean, what's the purpose of it? Because with its limited battery life, I just, and a tough keyboard to type on.
Yeah, my opinion is it's a bit of a novelty. And that may come from the fact that I did use the Libretto back, you know, a decade ago or so. And using the very small computer as something that you can carry around, not quite in your hip pocket, but very portably, very easily, is a good thing. But for day-to-day use, it's not something that I would recommend to the average
definitely
user.
Definitely not for day-to-day use. But you know what I'm thinking? And I haven't made my decision yet, but in the months will come. I'm going to do some seminars in Orlando in November. They're going to fly me out to do some computer seminars. And I'm thinking this would be great to take with me on the plane and plug in the projector. I think it will be adequate for that. Mm-hmm. And I think even having it where it dual boots into Linux and XP to demonstrate the versatility of it. So to make people aware stuff this technology exists and what its limitations are, it still may meet the needs of some folks, or partially. It's certainly not good for an only computer unless you're a child or your usage is less than once a day, because even if I had to respond to email on this, I wouldn't want to do it for very long. I can just type much faster on a regular keyboard, and having to slow myself down to say, fine, thanks, how are you, just answer one email, it's a bit of a chore with this keyboard. But it's better than nothing, you know what I mean, if that's the option.
Right, right.
And it seems like there's no danger of breaking it.
Right, and if you don't have room in your luggage or you don't want to bother with the extra weight of a full-size laptop, it can be a very, very advantageous thing to have with you.
You know what I think it'd be good for? It's about the same shape and size as some of portable DVD players, and it would work. Oh, no, when it doesn't have a DVD in it. Well, you can image. Wait a minute. You could image the DVD. And
there
then copy it over the network onto the hard drive, and then you could load a virtual CD-ROM or DVD drive like a daemon Well, no, you wouldn't need to do that. You could just load, like, a DVD player and play the raw files. That would work.
Yep.
And you could use it to watch on the plane because it'll certainly fit on those little tiny trays that come out from the back of the seat. Yeah, don't try and put a 17-inch laptop on the back of the seat. That's, you'll feel like a Tyrannosaurus Rex trying to type. But I'll tell you what, we're going to take a quick 60-second break. We'll be right back. Stay with us. And we are back live with the Computer America Show, live on the Business and Lifestyle Talk Radio Networks. We are broadcasting coast to coast
and around the world
the web at ComputerAmerica.com. Alice Hour, all this entire show, it's the special Linux edition of Computer America, the Going Linux edition specifically, with Larry Bushy, the host of the Going Linux podcast. And we're talking a little bit about Firefox 3, a little bit about Nopix, and a lot about this EEEPC. So I'm thinking, I agree, it is a bit of a novelty. It is kind of cool to see how small it is, you know, the cool factor, sort of like Craig and his blinking lights.
Hey! Your blinking lights.
It's not very practical, but it's cool.
It is, right.
Because I've got a client who bought the Sony TZ series laptop, and it cost him $3,600, and it's effectively the same dimensions as this laptop that costs $550. But now I understand why there's a difference, because that thing's got wireless N, it's carbon fiber, it's fast, fast, fast. I mean, you touch something, it happens. It's got a super thin, flexible screen. I don't know how they did that. Mm. And, it comes with an optical drive, but it's external. But at least it comes with it, you know, where this one is sort of you're on your own. And
it's a flexible screen?
Yeah. Yeah, you can flex it. You can't wrap it around around itself, but you can you can grab this each corner of the screen and sort of bend it.
Why would you want to do that?
Well, one of the main causes for laptop failure is people grabbing it by the screen to rotate it towards them when it's sitting on a desk, and this LCD screens will crack right down the center. And have you ever seen a cracked LCD screen?
No, actually I haven't.
Not a pretty sight.
It's cool. It looks like this rainbow of colors when it's off. It looks
on. Yeah, now that you mentioned it, I have. Yes, I have seen that. Okay, yes, okay.
And it's almost usually as much as or more to replace it than the cost of the laptop.
Yeah.
Yes.
Depending on the size of screen and the age of the laptop. So they're working with flexible technologies.
I had a screen that cracked from corner to corner, and one half was black and the other half had this rainbow effect.
even though a rainbow effect is
kind of pretty, it's not what you want to see when you're trying to use your laptop.
No, it's pretty expensive is what it is.
Exactly.
So the flexible screen, you can still crack it, but it gives it more flexibility, so it's less likely to be cracked. It's funny because one of the first things when you open up the manual for the EEEPC is it says, do not, even with its small screen, do not rotate the laptop by grabbing the screen. Always grab the base of the laptop. You know what I'm talking about? Like, let's say it's sitting on a desk and you're sitting beside somebody and they say, here, let me show you something. And you reach over. Instinctively, you want to reach over and grab the screen. Most people do. And turn the laptop. And that's how you break them. You've got to grab the base of the laptop and rotate it. And with the flexible screen, it reduces the likelihood of that happening. So, you know, kudos to Sony for going the extra mile and making a quality laptop. The only problem he had with it is we've got it configured that when he closes the lid, it's supposed to hibernate. And one time it didn't. And he's impatient. So he closes the lid and sticks it, and it's got like this neoprene case. And he takes it home, and I said, let me see your laptop. And he says, all right. You know, I went over to his house, and he's like, oh, my gosh, I can hardly touch it. It's hot.
Yeah.
And apparently it didn't turn itself off. Something happened. And maybe it didn't detect the screen was closed or something. And he said it was almost too hot to touch. And that's a little scary. So, you know, even at $3,600, it's still not a perfect world out there.
Right.
So I don't know. I think what I'm going to do, I think I'm going to go ahead and put Linux and XP on this thing because I still want to experiment with Linux and, you know, be able to show people. But, you know, I think mostly for me it'll be for demonstration purposes and presentation purposes about the technology. If I didn't do what I do for a living, I certainly couldn't use this laptop. It's just, I'm too impatient. It's just too slow.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the limitations of the smaller. But they are unique. You get a lot of credibility with them.
You know, the laptop I got from Tiger Direct is this EverX model laptop. It's got like a 12-inch widescreen, and it was $599 with a gig of RAM and a 120-gig hard drive and a DVD recorder and wireless GB built into it and a built-in microphone. I don't think it has a webcam, but you know, I never use that anyway, so I don't care. And it was just $50 more, and it seems so much more versatile, and a battery life of 4 hours instead of the battery life of two or two and a half on this one. And the size difference is just, you know, it's a little bit taller. It's maybe 2 inches longer and 2 inches wider. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, $50 price difference. And I get an optical, you know, it's got a DVD recorder in it. So, you know, it depends what your needs are. See, I like everything tiny. I want tiny everything. Tiny car, tiny laptop. I like that. So I like the idea of having the small screen. I just don't think they're... I think we're just looking at first generation as the problem. Maybe in a year or two, it'll be less expensive, and it'll be much faster. That's
yeah. One can hope, and I think there is enough of a market building for these small computers that one of two things is going to happen. They're either going to get more popular, and you'll see a plethora of different models, different processor speeds and hard drive sizes, or they'll just completely fizzle out and they'll go the way of the Dodo.
They'll go the way of the Apple Newton, yes.
Yes.
So, that. You know, what I'd like to see, I want to see smaller laptops with bigger batteries. That's what we need. I want a battery
well,
with...
Well, longer-lasting batteries. I don't know about physically larger, but...
Well, there's only one way to get that. Longer lasting, how long that battery lasts is pretty much dependent on how big that battery is. I mean, that Tesla automobile that they just came out with that's electric got a lot of batteries in it to go 0 to 60 in like 4 seconds.
Yeah.
So, but anything else going on in the Linux world or happening over at Going Linux?
Well, we continue to answer our listener questions, and we're having a ball just recording the show, and we've got an upcoming episode on how to use, it's an introductory episode coming up, on how to use Linux software to work with your iPod or other portable media device.
Oh,
sort of a review of what do you use instead of iTunes, since iTunes doesn't work on Linux.
Yeah.
Oh, it doesn't. I didn't know iTunes didn't work on Linux. Well, I guess that makes sense because it's all proprietary and locked down.
Well, but
it is proprietary and locked down. You can, though, some of the older versions of iTunes, you can run under Wine, and Wine is the Windows environment within Linux. It's not really Windows. It's an environment that's been developed so that you can run some Windows applications under it. And the later versions of iTunes don't work, but some of the earlier versions, like version 6, I think it is, and earlier, will run under Wine, just as it does under Windows, and you can get it to work that way. But there are some Linux options, Linux software options, that are pretty good as well. And we'll have a review of those and some step-by-steps in the more advanced episode that will be coming out next month.
Excellent. I'll definitely have to check that out. Now, aside from the release of Firefox 3, are there other upcoming releases to look forward to in the open source or Linux world?
Well, most of the Linux distributions are on some sort of release cycle that is a fraction of a year, as opposed to Windows, which takes multiple years to bring out the next version.
Right.
So, for example, Ubuntu, which is one of the most popular versions of Linux, is on a 6-month release cycle. And so every 6 months, approximately every 6 months, they bring out a new version with new features. And periodically, I don't remember how often it is, 1 or 2 years between them, they bring out a long-term support release. So those in between those long-term support releases are more cutting-edge, more advanced. But for the LTS, the long-term support releases, they put in a lot more effort to make sure that when they release it, it is absolutely rock stable, and or as close as they can, so that they can support it for multiple years longer than they do the intermediate releases.
Sure. Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to take another break, and then we'll kind of wrap things up. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com or our chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. Please join us in there. We're having a lot of fun. We'll be right back with more right after this. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. Don't forget, last week we were on a summer hiatus, so we did not have a Buddy List winner last Friday, but we will be having one this Friday. So make sure that you are on our Buddy List at ComputerAmerica.com. Just put in your email address there right at the homepage. You see it there. Put your first and last name. Click the Join button. You'll get an email to which you must reply. It's a confirmation email. It's a double opted-in system. And then you'll get our show reminder delivered fresh and piping hot into your email inbox every Monday. It's the only place where you get the entire lineup of shows that the guests who are appearing on Computer America, the topics we're going to be discussing for that entire week. And also, it puts you into our Friday drawing where we give away not one but two terrific prizes. One from Logitech, which is their we're giving away their Logitech Wave keyboard, and also from PC Tools, we award their Internet Security Suite. This is PC Tools' all-in-one security suite featuring their award-winning anti-spyware, antivirus, firewall, and spam protection. And also, by the way, when we receive a call, email, feedback, or chat room visit from someone who's outside of North America, that person is eligible to receive a copy of PC Tools' latest version of Spyware Doctor, now in its version 5.5. So make sure you're on our buddy list, and we will be announcing, actually Carrie will be because I'll be off that night, the buddy list winner of the week. Let's kind of wrap things up. Larry Bushy is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. He's been with us for both hours. We've been talking all about Linux. We do that again once every month here on the Computer America Show because it's an important topic. It's an important operating system. Larry, I know Carrie asked you what else is coming up on the podcast. What's coming up next?
Well, as I mentioned, the thing that we're talking about next is how to use Linux software to replace iTunes.
Right.
We'll be talking about connecting printers in a future episode.
Some
basic stuff. And some networking, so some things to look forward to.
Connecting printers that don't obviously supply you with a Linux drive, a printer drivers, which I'm assuming, right?
Yeah, we'll probably start the basic episode, introductory episode, with some basics of how to just basically connect a regular printer to your computer. But then we'll get into some of the more advanced things, like what if your printer's not supported? Where do you go? What resources are available? How do you get it working?
Got it. All right. Again, it gets the website is www.goinglinux.com, and we'll have a link to that on our show notes at computeramerica.com. Larry, it's always a pleasure having you here on the show, and thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Well, as always, thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
All right, we'll catch you next month.
Look forward to next month.
Exactly.
Third Tuesday.
There you go.
I'll be here.
All right. Have a good evening. Good night now.
Good night.
Goodbye. All right, coming up on tomorrow night's show, it's Wednesday Madness.
You know, so much has happened this week.
Yeah, I know.
Personal and professional lives.
I've seen the topic
ideas. It's not
going
to be a long enough show.
No, it won't be. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, the topic ideas grow, because like every time I go back and I add more to it. So.
Oh, my gosh.
I think we could make a show out of just one of those ideas.
I think you're right.
And they're not all just me. Some of it's you, too. You
That's
know?
True. That's right, yeah.
At
exactly.
least what I know of. You probably have some other stuff you could throw in there.
Yeah,
so.
I don't want to tell you.
Good. We'll save it for tomorrow. No spoilers.
No spoilers. All right. That's all coming up at tomorrow night's show. And again, as I said, don't forget to sign up for the Computer America Buddy List. And also, there might be a very special CompUSA contest just around the corner. That's all I'll tell you, though. I'm not going to tell you anymore. Just got to keep listening. But it's going to be a doozy. So until tomorrow night, this is Craig Crossman hoping that your hard disk never becomes floppy. We'll see you tomorrow night.
Good night, everyone.
The opinions you hear on the Business Talk Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of this station, Business Talk Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Business Talk Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Investing involves risks. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about the Business Talk Radio Network, contact us at 203-323-7300 or at our website, businesstalkradio.net.
Music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.